Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And I remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. Remember, MeQ is a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com. Or you can log on to onto our webpage, steinershow.org, and click on their banner. All the information is right there. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, www.mecu.com. We are now joined here in studio by Babatunde Salam, who is an advocacy leader at New Lens Productions, a finalist for the Peace First Prize, which we'll talk about as well, and Megan Sherman, production leader at New Lens Productions. Is it Megan or Megan? How do you say your name?
Megan.
You're Megan, okay. Mm-hmm. Some are Megan, some are Megan. I'll make sure I had it right. Megan, good to have you both here in the studio.
Thanks for having us.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Given all the or tweet us at Mark Steiner. Given all the shootings that have taken place in Baltimore in the last several weeks, more people killed over this weekend, confrontations between police and civilians, and also between citizens themselves, the project you all are working on for New Lens, I think, takes on even a greater importance. And I was really interested when I was watching both the 14-minute video that was done and the shorter piece when you were talking about this project, Babatunde.
Yes.
You go by Baba, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Baba, we'll shorten it. So talk a bit about this project you all are involved in, about creating some kind of dialogue between especially young African-American people in the streets and the police.
Okay. So us beginning this work, we started doing a film called Kids and Cops about 6 years ago. Yeah. And
with Kids on the Hill.
Yeah, with Kids on the Hill, as we were called then. And the piece was about investigating young people's frustration and frustration and hostility towards authority figures who they feel like were manipulating and abusing their power. And so we just said, well, let's get a camera. That's how we do work there at Kids on the Hill and at New Lens now. We do media work, so we said, let's get a camera, let's interview some people, let's find out what's going on. So we interviewed the ACLU, we interviewed police officers in Baltimore City, and we really tried to get to what's the core of the issue. And what we found out is that police officers feel like it was a generational problem and a generational gap. What we also found out is that according to ACLU, especially at the time in 2007, there was a huge, vast amount of arrests that were illegitimate and just frivolous. And it really led to a big conflict in the community that led to, you know, animosity between young people and police officers.
So what do you think? I mean, from your perspective, Megan, what is this work doing? I mean, what's the heart of it?
I think that initially we didn't know when we were first doing the work. I think we kind of were just experimenting. And, you know, the way that we do research at New Lens is through the use of media. And so initially we didn't know, but the project that we're concentrating on now is basically kind of concentrating on kind of bridging that gap between police officers and young people. I think one thing that I was really surprised to learn in the process of the whole project is that I shouldn't have been surprised, which is sad, is that, you know, young people and police officers we're all people. You know, we all have, you know, come out into the streets with our own stuff that we bring from, you know, our neighborhoods, from our backgrounds, from our homes. And a lot of times it's really difficult for young people and police officers to have those conversations, those hard conversations about why they have their biases and their, emotions.
But what have you discovered about this? Two levels. Yeah. Have you discovered about the police in this work you've been doing all the last couple of years and filming?
Good things or bad things?
Both. Okay. I want to know both. And what have you discovered?
Let me give you one interesting thing is, so when we were doing the trainings, you know, a lot of police officers were frustrated about getting all the calls that they thought were just ridiculous. And what we realized that, you know, the police academy and police trainings were about how do we enforce laws? But really it's about a lot of the work they were doing is social work. It's framing the issue of social work.
Like, it's social work because in terms of a police person's day-to-day job is to interact with human beings in the community.
And I mean, also, if you're
in good and bad times.
Yeah, and as we were talking, me and Megan, we were just thinking about, how many crimes and violent things that police officers see on a day-to-day. And they don't have any therapy on a day-to-day. They don't have any a place to release this trauma that they're constantly accumulating on, and it wears and tears. So that, you know, if you're just coming from a rape scene and now you're going to a domestic call or whatever, this is going to affect you. You know what I mean? And probably not in a good way. It's probably going to be built up frustration. And I think police officers they don't even look at it like that. They think they're just neutral robots who a lot of times can just go to a crime and just enforce laws. But that's not the reality.
So tell me what have you discovered? I'm curious what really new things you've learned, both negative and positive, about this process.
Well, I'll start with the negative because that's my favorite. is that I think the main thing that I've kind of learned, and I guess it's something that I'm kind of a conspiracy theorist a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I think I was surprised to know that we'll probably get in trouble for this, is that I think that the police department in general, like if you know the history of policing and jails in this country, then you'll know that, you know, the reason why jails and policing were even started came out of the abolition of slavery being abolished. And so I think one thing I was really surprised to know is that the police department, on a kind of institutional level, they don't really seem interested in implementing those kind of solution-oriented things around helping police officers deal with their trauma. Or
why do you say that?
Because it was really difficult for us to do the work that we did when we were in the police department training officers during the Diamond trainings, and we were really the only people who were there doing that work. And I think it's also just like a kind of general sentiment among officers and among the higher-ranking kind of officials that were there. It was a few people, like one or two officers, who were really, really helpful in that process. But majority of the people who we ran into were really hostile towards that kind of work and weren't really
It took a great deal of work on our part to really get the police officers to move an inch. Yeah. And I think, like you said, it's a systemic issue. I mean, and when you look at it, police officers are enforcing laws. So unless we change the laws that are on the books, unless we change our war on drugs, then we're going to have police officers who are doing, you know.
Well, when you say, when you were just saying, Megan, it was hard to move police kind of off the dime to want to commit to this conversation with you all, how did that occur? I mean, because you were trying to do this from both ends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You were trying to do this both, trying to talk to young, mostly African-American kids in the street, in communities, about how to interact and how to deal. Mm-hmm. But you're also trying to talk to the police at the same time about that, right?
Yes. Okay. So we have a connect in the police department. They're a good friend of ours who's seen in one of our documentaries called Kids and Cops. And we use that to talk to some other officers. And some of the officers are interested in the work, do find it necessary, because they see a hierarchy and a brotherhood in the police department that is not interested in the general population of Baltimore.
And when you find this, the kind of reluctance of some police officers to want to interact with you and kind of address this, you find that across the board, whether it's a man or a woman, black, white, or
Western
Latino,
district, Eastern
Asian,
district.
Whatever district, everybody.
And we have another video that's called The Brotherhood, and we don't really put out as much, but it really shows the...
It's a fire starter.
Yeah, it really shows the kind of, I hate this gang mentality to a certain extent that the police department really has, and the way that police kind of look at themselves as their own entity and communities as a completely different entity, and it is their job to...
Now, what makes you say that? I want to see Brotherhood. I've not seen that yet. You're going to have to let me see
that. We got to repost it, yeah.
Yeah, we got to repost that and maybe get on for a...
When you see it, there's no way you can have it.
So tell me.
And so one of the instances in the video was basically a young person basically kind of describing an instance where a police officer was called to the scene of a crime that they had reported at their home, like somebody broke into a car. And so the police officer basically describes how the people in that situation were just completely across the board wrong, even though they were the ones who called the police and they were the ones who were needing their assistance. And so the police officer basically just describes how, and that's why it's called The Brotherhood, is how no matter what the situation is, or I guess whether even when police officers to a certain extent sometimes are wrong in situations, they are taught that they should ride for one another, for lack of a better term.
They found no matter what to somehow blame the victim. They blamed somebody whose car was broken into as they suspected them as being.
Yeah, they're taught to suspect that, you know, everybody could possibly be a suspect.
Now, I'm going to open the phones here at 410-319-8888. I want to encourage you all to join this conversation where there are young people in this community who are part of New Lens Production. Babatunde Salam. Baba is an advocacy leader at New Lens. He's a finalist for the Peace First Prize, which we'll talk about in a bit. Megan Sherman is production leader at New Lens. 410-319-8888. They're trying to create they are creating a program through film and other work they're doing, training police and young people how to interact in different ways, trying to change the culture, both of the street and change the culture of the police department, which is a huge task to take on, whether you're young, old, or young or old. It's no easy task. And so we're exploring what this is, what they've learned from this. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow at gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook page. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. I'll check the Facebook in a minute. But join us. We need to listen to our young folks if we're going to change, because they are what is change. That is, they are what change is about. They're the ones who are going to bring it about. 410-319-8888. Michael, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hey, Mike.
Mike Scott. How are you, man?
Equity Matters. I'm great. I love these young people. And, you know, it's the work that they're doing is really about power analysis. And it's not, you know, it's like someone said, you know, you make a cake if you put the eggs and the milk and the butter. If you put the sugar on last after you bake the cake, it's really not the same. A lot of people want to, you know, kind of have these light conversations, sprinkle some stuff on the top. These kids are going really deep, and the work that they're doing, the way they edit stuff, is truly fair and balanced, not to sound like faux Fox News. But the work that they're doing is looking at deep issues of root causes and power analysis, and that's not what a lot of folks are ready for. So, you know, their work needs to be encouraged and supported and funded. It really gets to the root causes of some of the stuff and creates conversations that folks empowered aren't always ready to have, but it's really needed to make progress. So I just wanted to shout out and applaud the work that they do.
Michael, thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
So let's explore a bit of what this work really means. I mean, can you describe for our listeners what you actually do? When you let's start with the police. What do you actually do when you're with them, and how did you get inside, and where did this take place?
Good question.
We ask ourselves that every day. I think the
you sound a little jaundiced. This really has affected you. This work.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's been really transformative work. Like, I think going into doing the work initially, I had a lot of animosity towards police officers, like I imagine most young black people in Baltimore.
And I still do.
Yeah. And yeah, definitely.
You still do, you said?
Yeah. I mean, it would be ridiculous.
You both said you still do. Right.
Yeah, but it continued.
Go ahead, I'm making.
Yeah, so that animosity was definitely, I won't say completely diminished, but it was decreased a lot, so, yeah.
Why was it decreased? Because you also just said a minute ago you felt frustrated by the process.
I think because I realized the humanity that a lot of officers really come to their jobs with. Like most officers, now, I mean, there are some officers who came into the work wanting to basically be like, what's the word I would like to use? Like cowboys and Indians. Like they wanted to come in and police people's communities without actually being a part of them. And so that really frustrated me to know that. But I think the officers who really came into it from a place of love and from a place of compassion, those were the ones who really touched me. And to see the transition that they made from being compassionate, caring people to being really cold-hearted and, you know, lacking in love and compassion kind of made me sad. So
I want to come back to what
so
you
there
said.
Was, go ahead, to Baba. Me, there was a – we started off kind of rough. We had a pilot and where we spent about 6 weeks intimately meeting with police officers weekly. And once getting
to know. Like 3 days a week.
Yeah, 3 days a week.
Like
yeah.
That.
And when did this take place?
This was the summer of 2009. So.
Is that the last time you've done this?
No.
That
okay.
was one of the pilots.
Yeah, that was the pilot. Okay.
Okay. All
right. And we spent. At the beginning, they did. Police officers were oftentimes suspicious of the young people that they were meeting with there. They never believed the story or an experience that a young person was telling. They were like, well, you deserved it somehow. But after really working with us for about those 6 weeks, we really got to build camaraderie with the officers. So, I mean, we did have moments where it was touch and go, but once you get to know and really they understand that you have some validity and some intelligence and it was, yeah, I think that was what it was. I mean, so we also did research, I mean, evaluations of our trainings, and towards the end, we something like 92% of the officers found the training was helpful. 80% of the officers said they learned something new about young people. And I think that's one of the most interesting things because a lot of these officers are not from Baltimore City. They're not from the neighborhoods that they are policing. And that is important. Like, that is,
and many of them don't live there currently while they don't, they're policing the
exactly.
neighborhoods. So that really makes it a very different kind of experience for them when you're not, you know, you don't know anybody in the community outside of when you have to go to their house for some kind of call about a burglary or a domestic situation. Like, you know, it really changes the way that, you know, people interact.
Because I saw the stats that you all have put up about about what you just read. Mm-hmm. I was reading those, and I was thinking about, okay, well, that says that 92% thought they got something out of the training. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious what you think that means and what takes it to the next level. Because one of the things you said was that one of the things you discovered, Megan, was that – and you said the same thing, Baba, but that you found officers who did their job out of love and compassion. Mm-hmm. The people who were there because that's what motivated them, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what does that tell you about what could be that isn't? Or does it say anything about that at all?
I think it does. I think it's just like teachers or anybody else in that kind of service work field is that most people go into it from a place of wanting to help people and wanting to make a difference in the world. And I think a lot of times our systems make it really difficult for those people to be able to flourish and to be able to do their jobs well. And It doesn't. I think that sometimes, like, police departments and schools don't really give those people the tools that they need to be able to make the kind of change that they want to make.
They don't incentivize the good officers, I would say, for sure. For example, there's an officer, the officers that we work with very intimately right now, I would love to have on the air right now, but the police department censors and, you know,
say that one more time.
Some of the officers that we work with closely that I would like for them to be in this room.
For
the listeners to hear, right now, the police department censors their own officers from being able to speak on positive experiences they've had with young people and et cetera in the community.
I mean, have you been officially told that officers are
officially
not allowed to do
this? Yes.
Regular straight street officers?
Very much so.
A specific one or two, to be exact.
That you know that you... So can you talk about this? You said specific one or two. Well, we only have 90 seconds left. We can come back and finish the conversation. Mm-hmm. After the top of the hour. Is that right? Gunnery says yes. I'm making sure we're saying yes. Producer, the director says yes. We can do that. So we're going to take a short break and come right back and pick up where we left off. Don't go away as we talk with young people from New Lens Productions about their work between kids in the communities and the police. Stay with us. And where are you, folks? You're always here talking about how bad the police are, how bad my mayor is, how bad the state's attorney is. Well, have a conversation with young people who are trying to do something about it. 410-319-8888. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. You're listening to the Mark Steiner Show on WEAA 88.9 FM, celebrating 88 days of summer. Details at WEAA.org. Summer is winding down, and support for WEAA is provided in part by AAA Mid-Atlantic. More information available at 866-4-GLASS-1. You figure it out. Okay. We're here with the folks from New Lens, Babatunde Salam, who's advocacy leader at New Lens Productions, finalist for the Peace First Prize, and Megan Sherman, who is production leader at New Lens Productions, 410-319-8888. So where do you all take this from here? What do you do with this?
Okay, so
we smile at each other. They're very serious about their work. Go ahead, Bob.
Sorry about that.
It's all right, man.
So... We are continuing this work. So what we've done since the police trainings in 2010 and 2011 is we've actually, organizations have come to us about the research that we've conducted, the evaluations that we did, and we've consulted and helped other organizations get started. For example, there's an organization called Youth Unlocked. What we would like to do is basically what the mission of the work is, which is reducing the arrest of African Americans in the city, especially young African Americans. Young African-American men. So basically what we've been doing is just various strategies to bring that arrest rate down. Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously, it needs to be done on a community level, which is, you know, diversion programs, programs that are helping to raise our young men. And it needs to be done on a systemic level with changing of the laws.
So, I mean, A, we do need more diversion programs in this community. I mean, mm-hmm. and we don't have them anymore, really. They don't exist in any massive way.
Not even.
I mean, officers, and that's one of the things we learned. Officers will tell us that there are times when they on the street and they see a young man who they don't really want to arrest. They understand that it's just a small bag of marijuana or et cetera, but they have nowhere to send this besides jail.
And a lot of the work that we did with young people is what I know that's what I'm most interested in changing, because I really feel like it's communities' responsibilities to kind of respond to some of the systemic issues that are plaguing the communities, at least from an institutional standpoint. I don't feel like there's much interest in changing that dynamic, like it is there
from
for
whom?
A reason. From the people who are running the police departments, from the, you know what I'm saying, like that. Police were put in place to police these communities for a reason, and I don't think that those reasons are going to change anytime soon. And so the part of the work that I'm most interested in doing is educating community members on how they could avoid these situations, how to really, take charge of their communities and not just feel like they are these kind of, fish in a fishbowl that are just being watched.
I mean, personally, I learned so much just by teaching in the high schools that I just graduated from not too long ago.
Where'd you graduate from?
City College.
City, okay.
But what I learned was really just just things that are on a practical level young people don't know, like the difference between loitering and littering. Young people think that throwing trash on the ground is loitering. People think that some young people thought that they were being arrested because they were out past 11 o'clock and midnight, and that's just the curfew laws where police come around and pick people up. But since they would be downtown for such long detained periods, they would think that they were arrested. Young people just have no real framework for understanding their relationship with the law, and that builds animosity. That builds when you see your uncle, your brother, your father, beaten in the street by undercover officers for just being in a drug area or what they would call an open market area. That builds hostility, and we need to inform our young people. We need to help our young people no longer build these records at such an early age that basically destroys their education and career aspirations. I mean, yeah.
So what about the other side of it, before we get this last caller in here, on this particular segment? What about the other side, your work with the police? Does that continue?
I mean, we hope that it can continue. I think that's the most difficult work to a certain extent, but I think it is the work that really does need to be done. If we can get into the police department again and do more trainings and get more young people involved in having those difficult conversations with officers, then I think that work I would love to continue doing that.
It also requires the consent of the police department. That's another thing that we haven't gotten in the past year or 2 years, actually.
And really what we need is the support of community members. Like, if community members would, I don't know if people have plugged this already, but you can vote for the Peace Prize online.
What is this Peace Prize?
So the Peace Prize is so the Peace Prize is basically a fellowship that is offered by an organization called Peace First in Boston, Massachusetts. And you can actually vote for this project that we've been doing for the past 4 or 5 years, really. And you can vote. Yeah, go on their website or their Facebook and vote for this project, because it's really helpful, and we want to continue this work.
So this would allow you to continue the work and get money in the door.
Yes, it would, because we've been doing it pro bono, you know, just free for so long, but it really requires funding and a strategic, even more a bigger strategic effort. Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking it up now. So people can go to www.peacefirst.org/prize.
Yeah.
And you can see how you can vote here.
You can also go to New Lens's Facebook page, New Lens Productions Facebook, and the link is right there on top.
So we should do that. And let's get this final call in. 410-319-8888. Deborah, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Baba. I'm turning my radio down. I just had to call because I'm Baba Tunde's auntie, but that's really irrelevant here. And I am so proud of Baba Tunde and Megan for what they're doing. And I just really want people to understand how important this work is. We're talking about saving the lives of young people. You know, I just want to, like, just iterate that. I don't want that to be missed, that the work that these two young people are doing at New Lens is critical work. And I hope that they will go and vote at the website that Babatunde has given out so that they can continue this work. We're not talking about just work just for the sake of, you know, talking about it on the radio. We're actually talking about saving the lives of young people. And too often as adults, we criticize young people and we talk about what they're not doing. We knock them. And when we get young people who are doing things, we need to give them full support. So I just want to say that to folks, please vote for this Peace First Prize for Babatunde Salam so these two young people can continue that work.
Thank you so much, Deborah. And we're encouraging folks to do that as well. And we want to follow this work with some intensity to see what you all are doing, because I think that what you're doing is really important on both sides of the street. If we can, we'd love to get the commissioner on here to talk more about what's going on.
Yeah, we've actually had a few discussions with commissioner. Yeah, he says publicly that he's interested in these type of discussions, interested with this type of work. The commissioner, from what I can tell, is interested in a different policy than, say, our past couple. But, you know, that's to be seen. You know, the time will tell whether or not he's truly interested in it. You know, yeah, it's not just words. It's about actions.
So what are your next steps?
Well, we're going to get breakfast after this.
Yeah, and we're going to continue making films because that's what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, what is it? Do you know what your next project is going to be around this?
Oh, around police issues or just in general in life? I mean, I think that the work that we've been doing so far, where I feel like we're going with the work right now is trying to figure out a way to teach people how to police their own communities because – and me and Bob have had a lot of conversations about how controversial that is and how in different communities it looks a lot different than others. And like we always have a discussion about how in the Jewish community it is, in the Orthodox Jewish community in Baltimore, that's a normal thing. That's something that is, you know, just a part of the way of life there. But how different it may be if there was a group of black people in any community in Baltimore who said that they wanted to police their own community. And
well, I mean, there was a time in Baltimore City when we started covering these issues that before we take a break here, just to throw this out there, that actually the Nation of Islam used to patrol the projects, and that was stopped by Baltimore City. But they cut down on violence. They negotiated disputes between people, between men and women. They were a presence that people respected, whether they were NOI members or not, whether they believed in the NOI's religious and spiritual beliefs or not, they were respected in the community, and people, you know, responded to that. There was a time before that the Panthers played that same role in communities.
Yes.
Right? That ending violence and disputes and talking to people and feeding children and starting a place for kids to go after school and so all that. I mean, that's a discussion we should have. I mean, we'll help you promote that discussion on the air.
That would be great.
Yeah, that is
all
our goal.
You got our commitment to come back here and let's hear some more from what you all are doing.
Thank you so much.
Babatunde Salam is advocacy leader at New Lens Productions and finalist for the Peace First Prize. But please go on there on the New Lens Facebook page so you can vote. So our students here can get that prize and continue the work, along with Megan Sherman, production leader at New Lens Productions. Megan and Baba, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Good to have you all.
Thanks for having us.
Good. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to have another conversation with Edward Wyckoff Williams about his latest work, about the March on Washington, and more. Before we have a conversation with Tracy Martin, father Trayvon Martin, will be coming on in about 20 minutes. Stay with us. We'll be right back.